Welcome to episode 120 of the Geocaching Podcast, Geocacher's Creed, recorded live on September 8th, 2009. I'm your host, XPunkX with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate on our show today, please call 724-444-7444 and our Talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join live on our chat room to participate with our other listeners. That can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line, which can be found at 206-350-3GPS. And we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Daryl, it's been quite a while since we've had a live podcast. I really missed it. It was good to have the break because I could spend some time with my family, but it's good to be back.
It is. But, you know, that's like almost, 3 weeks, really, even though it's only one show in between. It seems like 3 weeks of stuff that we've missed.
Yeah, it really does.
I know you've been busy with some family stuff. And, you know, I've been pretty busy too, but mostly, unfortunately, with work. And things there have been getting worse and leaving less time during the week. It's, you know, lots of tedium and hopefully we'll come to an end before too long.
Yeah, no kidding.
Last weekend, though, we did have a lot of fun, though. We went to three geocaching events in Roger City. It was a Friday night through Sunday afternoon thing. And really, really great events. Had a lot of fun. And I got a few cool pictures, but it was kind of a rainy, drizzly weekend. But I got some special permission to get onto the 40-mile Point Beach there, where there's this really cool old lighthouse, and you can see the photos that I shot on my Flickr stream. But I got some permission to get out there for sunrise and after sundown so that you could get the really cool photos. But unfortunately, it was drizzly, so my shots aren't all that interesting. these nasty white skies.
I'm looking forward to it. I know that even under the worst conditions, you usually have some pretty decent shots.
Yeah, well, and I really got one of the women who volunteers there a little bit confused, because she was wondering why it was that I was setting up to take pictures when the light was getting, darker. So I had to explain to her that, it's very easy. You leave the shutter open for 6 seconds or 12 seconds and you get enough light, plus then you get all the great colors. Well, we didn't get any colors. So, yeah, the shots turned out very nicely, and a lot of the folks at the lighthouse actually like these a lot better for the simple reason that you don't need a lighthouse when it's bright, clear, and sunny. You need it for those dark and stormy days, and it really kind of gives you that dark and stormy feeling, even though you can't see any of the rain. Some of the shots you can see the leaves blurring around, and that was in the morning because, oh boy, was it windy that morning and cold. So I did have a lot of fun. This weekend, though, we spent pretty much the whole weekend working on Cachermaniacs. I escaped Monday, though, yesterday for some caching on Harson's Island, and that was Labor Day. So pretty much all of us in the U.S. had the day off. And Team Legend 4 and Dre and I went out, got another 3 Earth caches. Many more traditionals, but unfortunately no virtuals, because we actually cleared out the virtuals that were over there back in May. Didn't have a chance to get over to the island at that point, but there were no virtuals on the island. It was all on the mainland. But aside from that, I'm just getting ready for Saturday's geocaching 12 of 12, and really looking forward to it. Sounds like we're going to have some great entries. A couple of people have already tweeted that they're going to be traveling and doing caching at the same time. So I know Sunday I'm going to be spending a lot of time looking at those submissions that all of the geocachers are posting to geocaching12of12.com. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and I know I'm going to be really busy on Saturday. Sunday actually watching those, but Saturday putting mine together.
True, and I really wanted to join and be part of the 12 of 12 caching this time, but I'm not going to be able to join because my son is having his birthday party. He had his birthday actually last Tuesday, which is why we didn't join the show, which is why we didn't have a live show. But we're having his, public birthday where all the grandparents and everything can come over, because it is, a Saturday as opposed to a Tuesday. But so we'll be doing that. But again, I don't we're not going to be doing caching, but it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm sure I'll get 12 pictures because it is his birthday party, and it'll be a lot of fun. But, you know, that's really kind of what's been consuming my time. It's his birthday, and we've done some caches here. We decided to go ahead and clear out our town. We had probably 8 or 12 caches that we needed to clear out. So we went ahead and cleared those out, well, you know, since the last time, and hit a few other ones. And, you know, so we're actually up over 400 now, which is, it feels good for me. I'm waiting just now for the 500 mark, but we're slow.
Congratulations
and
on breaking the 400. But, you know, no little geocaching games at the birthday party?
Well, you know, I do have to give his travel bug back to him because what we've been doing for our kids is when they turn one, we send a travel bug out in their name, you know, kind of with, you know, it's, we own it, but we send it out in their name. It's something with that they like to do. Like with Micah, we sent a toy tracker, and Eli, we sent a book, a little book. And with Micah's, it didn't come back quite to us, but it was close enough that we could send my sister-in-law to go get it. This time it was actually in Ohio near Toledo. And so when we were at the Geobash, we went ahead and picked it up. So we've got that one back. We're going to go ahead and give it to him on Saturday.
Oh, cool. Yeah, at least it gave you a nice excuse to go out there. You know, you had to grab that travel bug.
Exactly. And you know, it wasn't too far, so it was good cash-in, and we grabbed the travel bug.
Awesome.
Now, Daryl, we have some news out of Groundspeak. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it's actually Jeremy of Groundspeak announced that they have the update kit for the GeoMate Junior in stock at the Groundspeak shop. That kit supports Windows with Internet Explorer, Firefox. Macintosh support is said to be coming, but no information about it yet. And the update kit sells for just under $25 US. GeoMate Junior owners who bought the unit before June 30th can get a $5 rebate with the form, and we'll put the link to both the info on the product and the rebate form on the show notes. But for those of us who have the GeoMate Junior, this will allow us to now update the unit and get it, you know, with current caches, all that cool kind of stuff. And I'll hopefully have a review once I get the cable in.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project keeps you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. I've asked the question, do you usually take a camera with you when you're geocaching? 86% said yes. These cameras range from professional photographic gear to camera phones. Since the majority of you said that you do carry a camera with you when you geocache, don't forget the geocaching 12 of 12 coming up this Saturday, September 12th. I did my first 12 of 12 last month and really enjoyed it. So tell me, do you usually take a camera with you when you go geocaching? Want to find out more? Follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
We've had a couple call-ins since the last time that we had a live podcast. Some people have called our voicemail and left us some feedback, and that number is 206-3503-GPS. You can do that anytime you want. Let's hear the first one.
Hey, Andy and Daryl. This is Dave. I go by Dudley Grunt, and I just thought I'd let you know that I just made an FTF on a new cache just published this evening called the Aqua Cache. It's GC1XNY4. Call you because I made it a find while listening to last week's episode on my iPod, and just thought I would share that. Hopefully I'll get home in time to join in on tonight's show. This is Tuesday night. Thanks. Bye. Happy trails.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Rain from Texas, and I just wanted to let you know I did my first virtual cache today. I'm only in the 200s right now, but I'm loving geocaching a lot. And I got to tell you, maybe this will change as I grow more seasons, but without having a little piece of plastic in my hand to unscrew and write on, I don't know, it just wasn't special. Like, it was a really cool thing I saw. It was an old tree trunk that had been cut down, and so the stump that was left, they carved it into a bear. And it was beautiful, but I really wanted to find a little piece of plastic nearby that I could write my name on. I don't know why. It's just, I don't know, I need that tangible thing. Maybe I'm alone on this. I'm not sure. I just figured I'd give my comment since we just talked about virtual caching. Thanks a lot for the podcast. I'll keep listening. Bye.
Thanks both of you for those call-ins. Again, if you guys have any questions, comments, or anything for us during the week while you're listening to this or any other time, give us a call. Set 206-350-3GPS, and we'd love to hear from you. Now, Daryl, tonight we're going to be talking about the Geocacher's Creed. And some of you may not really know what the Geocacher's Creed is, or if you do, you've never really looked at it. So we're going to talk up a little bit about it and go ahead and make sure, you know, it's a good thing to follow. So a little bit of background history on it. On November 23rd, 2004, Coyote Red started a forum at geocaching.com to help facilitate the creating of the Geocaching Code of Ethics. With over 60 geocachers involved in a long discussion and several different pages of forum posts later, the creed was born. This discussion rose out of concerns that geocaching could be banned in some locations because of the inappropriate actions of just a few people.
Now, it was long debated as to whether or not the rule should be mandatory or voluntary. Many people agree that the creed should be voluntary and should stand independent of the rules or requirements of any geocache listing site so that it was representative of geocaching and geocachers, regardless of their location or the listing service used. This also made evident the need for a name change from Geocacher's Code to the Geocacher's Creed to better reflect its voluntary nature. It's a set of guiding principles, not a body of laws or rules.
At the core, the creed is about being safe, legal, and ethical. This is broken down into seven following ideas. When placing or seeking geocaches, I will, 1, not endanger myself or others. Number 2, observe all laws and rules of the area. Number 3, respect property rights and seek permission where appropriate. Number 4, avoid causing disruptions or public alarm. Number 5, minimize my and others' impact on the environment. Number 6, be considerate of others. And number 7, protect the integrity of the game pieces. Now, Daryl, can we break this down a little bit?
Sure. Why don't we go down through each of these points, actually, and give some examples both from the GeoCrete site and from our own experience. And I'll start off with number 1, which is not endanger myself or others. Now, like any other outdoor activity, geocaching involves some risk, and many geocachers enjoy manageable risk. Minimize any inordinate risk, though. So, you know, if you got something near the edge of a cliff, for instance, don't drop it, you know, a cache there, because it could be a little bit dangerous. You know, when creating cache, describe any hidden dangers, and if possible, arrange the hunt to minimize these dangers. Yeah, and this is why we have all those special warning flags so that people will know if there's, you know, snakes or poison ivy and that kind of stuff in the area.
Now, Daryl, that brings up a good point, too. We have found a couple different caches. One that I would have never taken my kids to begin with because we had to hike up a pretty steep hill. And as many of you know, my kids are almost 4 and just turned 2. But there was another one we could drive up to that was on the same cliff. We drove up to it, and it had the same steepness down to the ground, and I definitely had to be careful with my kids that they did not get too close. Again, this is something that I could tell from the cache page, but again, when seeking it, obviously I'm going to minimize my risk. I'm not going to put my kids in danger. And as a cache placer, make sure that you put that in the log too.
Well, that's very important that you know your limitations and be aware of the surroundings and not attempt anything that goes beyond those abilities or, you know, your comfort zone. If you feel a little bit uneasy about finding a cache, it's not worth getting hurt over a cache. A cache you own or one you're trading out of could be found by children or even prison work crews, so consider the location of the cache and those likely to find it when deciding what to leave as trade items. You know, so this really goes back into the, don't leave anything dangerous, no matches, knives, that kind of stuff. And we also can't forget that food attracts the animals, so you know, don't put food in there either.
True. And this brings us back to the number 2. Observe all laws and rules of the area. Don't break the law or rules of an area or encourage others to do so too when placing or seeking a cache. And also don't leave illegal items in the cache. And that basically, you know, talk to Daryl's point, a little bit of there. You know, don't leave knives and things like that, but those aren't necessarily illegal. But don't, you know, if you have illegal things, definitely don't put them in there. People don't want to find weed or things that don't belong in a cache, or even condoms or things like that. And that's just, I would say, common sense. But again, when placing a cache, too, don't break the law. As if you don't make a cache that someone's going to have to go find at night, if it's in a park that's closed at night.
Yeah, and respect the property rights. And this is the third one. Respect the property rights and seek permission where appropriate. You know, really, we like to advise everyone to seek permission for any cache at this point. But check if permission is required before placing the cache on private property, and respect the landowner's wishes either way. Check if public land has a geocaching policy and respect the existing policies. Promptly remove your cache if the land manager or steward asks, and do not damage or interfere with the function of buildings, structures, or signage. And this actually gets into another good one. You know, if you're placing a cache at like a fast food place, don't put it on the drive-thru where people are going to be potentially blocking the drive-thru.
Yeah, and I would say that goes back into also other things too, that, you know, don't damage or interfere with the function of building structures or signage. That means, I would say, also don't put it somewhere where someone's going to have to unscrew something that they think may be an electrical box, because there are people that put caches in fake electrical boxes and things like that, because you're not always going to know if it is or isn't a cache, and you open it up and you could get shocked or cause, you know, whatever that you're messing with not to be able to work anymore. And I'd say definitely, you know, you have to think about what it's going to look like to others. And if you're breaking something, or, you know, even as far as do not damage or interfere with the function, that I would say includes geotrails too. I mean, if you're in a park and you're going to cause someone to wear a geotrail, especially make sure that you can have permission there. But be respectful and move that cache every 6 months, and so that you don't create a very big geotrail. And that also brings us down to number four, which is avoid causing disruption or public alarm. Don't place a cache near schools, government buildings, unless the administration and staff are fully aware of the placement. And I would say that is going down into even the other people, not just, you know, the person who's in charge of the building, like, say, the school principal, but make sure that they make people aware of it, like their teachers, their janitors, and things like that. We've talked special times about that several times, you know, about the Columbine School and their scare that they've had there several times. Also, you know, use caution where children play. Parents are understandably concerned when strangers are near their children. I know that when there's strange adults at a park where it's mostly kids, that's going to cause me to kind of make sure that my kids are really close to me and not anywhere near the strange adult where mostly it's children. Also, don't place a cache near critical infrastructure that might be considered a terrorist target, or create a cache that could be mistaken for a terrorist device. Just for example, like a pipe bomb. Don't make a cache that's out of a pipe. That way you can, you know, it may look cool, it may fit in with the terrain, but if someone sees you pull that out, it's going to make them think that it's a pipe bomb, and you're going to get the police detonating your cache.
Yeah, now another good point, though, is that now schools are off limits. You can't place caches at schools because they've had problems with people putting caches there and being misunderstood. So let's move into number five, though, which is minimizing my and others' impact on the environment. And this really goes back to largely what you were just talking about with the geotrails. You know, you want to follow the leave no trace ethic wherever possible. That means, you know, make sure that you're leaving only footsteps and taking only, you know, the swag out of the cache. You don't want to disrupt anything any more than absolutely necessary. So don't go hacking limbs and, you know, forging new trails if you can at all avoid it. When seeking a cache, practice the lift, look, replace. Put all stones and logs back where you found them. Leave the area as you found it, or better, like picking up the litter. So, you know, we've all gone through, I'm sure, and, you know, kind of torn up a place looking for cash. But before you go, just make sure to put everything back as it was. It makes it more fun for the next finder, and, you know, it doesn't disrupt the area too much. Obtain the best possible coordinates for your cache to reduce unwarranted wear on the area. Recheck and correct your coordinates if finders find significant problems. Do not abandon a cache. If you stop maintaining the cache, remove the container, archive its listing, and explain the disposition of the cache in your archive note, or put it up for adoption or rescue. If you delist a cache on one host but keep it on another, make sure you mention that it's in the archive notes to prevent the rescuers of an active cache. Now, this is something, again, with the archiving of the caches, it's kind of not really a common practice anymore because they did have problems with people having them on multiple sites. But I still wish that we had something like the official rescue list, because that way we wouldn't have to worry about caches being left around as much. You know, we'd have someone go out and find it.
Yeah, and this is also, we can hear as be considerate of others too. Treat other geocaches civilly in the field, in the forums, or wherever your paths may cross. I've seen too many different times. Most of the time, you know, I get treated civilly when I'm in the field or at events. It's a lot of times in the forums that I see where people are not. And I'd say, you know, we've even seen it here where we got a lot of new people who are new cachers, and they've got a lot of questions. And a lot of times in the official forums, those people get flamed because sometimes geocachers can be mean. I would make a call out to all of our listeners here to do that one specifically, especially in the forums. Also, don't spoil the hunt for others. Allow them to experience the cache as the owner intended. Avoid leaving tracks to the cache, which is just like Daryl was talking about with a leave no trace. And also, don't disrupt the cache area or mark the hiding spot in any way. Minimize giving unsolicited clues that reveal the cache. You know, examples are like spoilers. Like if you're going to take pictures, make sure that the container isn't anywhere near where it's hidden. Or if it's a special container, don't take a picture of it and post it, especially in your logs too. Now, you're also going to want to not provide any hints if the cache description asks you not to, too. In all cases, be cryptic about it, or, you know, encrypt your hints when you put them online. Edit your log if the cache owner requests you to remove spoilers, too. Don't be so proud of yourself that you can't edit your own logs. If the cache owner asks you to, go ahead and please do that. Promptly also alert the owner if any issues with their cache come up too. Making minor repairs if you can, it'll save some of the owners a trip, because I know a lot of owners aren't necessarily within 5 miles of their own caches, or maybe even 10 or 20. Sometimes it takes them a while to get out to them. So if you can, go ahead and make minor repairs, but promptly alert the cache owner of those issues. Cache owners also appreciate feedback too, guys. Write an online log, send an email, otherwise let the owner know about your experience with their cache. TNLN, SL, TFTC is nice, but a lot of times we like to see more than just that. Tell us more about your experience too. Only place caches that you can maintain and respond promptly when problems are reported too. If you can't get to it quickly, don't place it. If you exchange items as your cache finder, trade kindly, considering what future finders would like, and leave something of equal or better value than you take. If you take a McDonald's toy, put a McDonald's toy in. If you take a travel bug, put a travel bug in. If you take a coin, make sure that you take a coin, put a coin back in, and log that you took that coin too, so that it doesn't go missing too. If you place a traveling item in the game, attach a tag that describes its goal, so that others can help it too. All too often, we go ahead and we get out in the field and see a traveler, but don't know exactly where it's going. So we've got no idea if we can even help it along in the field. If you're going to hold a traveler longer than a couple weeks or so, make sure you contact the cache owner so that way they know why their cache is in your hand, or their traveler is in your hands and not been moved. Obtain permission from the originator before copying unique themes, techniques, and adding to an existing series of caches, or placing a cache as close to another cache too. People just like to, you know, get credit where credit is due.
Now, another thing, going back to that mention of the travelers, is it's always a good idea too that if you pick up a traveler that's missing that tag, try to print something up so that the next finder knows what the mission is, and put that in, you know, like a nice Ziploc bag or something with the item. Because it really does make it easier for the rest of us. Not all of us are using internet-enabled phones where we can look up the travel bug to find out what his mission is before we have to pick it up and take it home. And then let's move on to number 7, which is protect the integrity of the game pieces. The owner entrusts you to not damage or jeopardize the cache. Try to ensure that the cache is ready for the next finder and is in as good or better condition than you found it. So again, going back, make sure that, you know, you zip up the Ziploc bags that the log's in, replace it if it's got holes and you have another one handy, and that kind of stuff, you know. It's never fun to find a cache that's sitting wide open because someone didn't lock it correctly. So those kind of things really are important for those of us as finders to keep in mind. And make sure that that container is properly closed to prevent the contents from getting wet or destroyed. Be inconspicuous in retrieving, signing in, and replacing caches to avoid vandalism. You know, this is that whole muggle stuff. And again, also to, you know, avoid any alarm. Put the cache back where you found it and rehide it as well. Don't move the cache. If you suspect the cache is not in the intended spot, hide it as best you can and alert the owner. So don't go, you know, moving a cache that you might think doesn't belong in the crook of that tree up to a branch or something. It might belong there and just the camo vanished. So try to find some camo and, you know, cover it up again. Don't collect traveling items meant to stay in the game. You know, this is pretty much like stealing. You know, these are things that are supposed to move around. They're not trade items. They're not swag. So if you pick up a traveler, make sure that it continues to travel. And don't tamper or involve a game piece in an alternate game without the owner's permission.
Now, these are just some examples. There are obviously more things that go into each of these seven headings that we could talk about. It's basically just a voluntary thing, but a good thing that's going to help keep our game clean, fun, and just, well, you know, a great game for everybody.
This is largely the kind of stuff that really comes down to just, you know, good courtesy to the game. So if we want to continue playing the game, it makes sense that, you know, we abide by a lot of these kind of things, and in many cases going above and beyond it.
Now, next week we are going to be talking with Head Hard Hat about caching with the BlackBerry. We've mentioned a few things on here, but he's got experience with it, so we thought we'd ask him on. So if you're a BlackBerry user, if you think you're going to become a BlackBerry user, definitely make sure to join us next week as we talk caching about the BlackBerry and with the BlackBerry with Head Hard Hat of the GeoSnippets. Now, here's something that I'd like. We're going to premiere here this year. It's going to be a contest we're going to be having. And many people have seen me talk about it a little bit, hinting on it on Twitter. So I'd like to inform you here. You know, how would you guys like to, like $50 to spend at the Cash Advance store? Lisa from Cash Advance has donated $50 to a lucky winner of our geocaching podcast. So how do you win? Starting in episode 124, which will be a few weeks from now, so not next week, for a whole month, the whole month of October, if you call in live during our summer caching story section of the show, you'll be entered into the drawing. On the first show in November, we're going to go ahead and do a random drawing. It's not one that we like the best. It's just going to be a random drawing to get your story, you know. So get your stories ready, and from this summer's caching, and get ready to share, call in live, not on the voicemail. You have to call in live, and we are going to go ahead and pick a random winner, and it'll be $50 towards the Cash Advance store. Lisa's got some pretty awesome things there in Cash Advance store. Head on over there if you want to check it out and get your ideas ready of what you may want to purchase with your winnings, your $50 winnings. So get your stories ready. Again, that'll be starting in episode 124, which will start in the beginning of October. So join us each Tuesday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the Talk Shoe Service. You can call in live 724-444-7444, and the TalkCast ID is 7525. Links to all of our show notes and past episodes can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. You can call our voicemail line at 206-3503-GPS anytime and leave us a voicemail. Have a great week and safe caching.